What's up, Rundown Nation? Well, back with you here. We're in week 13 of college football, and for that, we brought on a special treat. We got Mr. Josh Harlow joining the program again. Heard fantastic things about our audience, about what you have to say. They love the energy you bring to the program. How you doing, Josh?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic. And by you guys, he means the other guy here that was with me too, Mr. Story. You know, people don't get as excited about this guy as they used to. He's missed now two pick-ems in his lifetime. Again, I think he's probably picked like 40 of them or 50 of them, but he's missed two pick-ems. People may be a little angry with you, Mr. Story. What do you have to say about that?
Not thrilled with the performance last week. Miami actually held up their end of the bargain. They put up 41. NC State, though, 7 points. I'm old news now. It's all about the new hotness, and that's Mr. Harlow.
It absolutely is, and I'm excited to see what you guys both have to say on the games from last week and the games. Obviously, we're going to get into some. We got about five games on the slate for this week, week 13, but I would like to jump back and see what you guys thought of that. And, you know, I'm a bit partial when it comes to the USC-Iowa football game from last week. What were your thoughts on that game? Josh, did you watch that game? Who were you cheering for? Hawkeyes, right?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I didn't really have a cheering favorite. Sorry to disappoint there, but I thought this was another fascinating game. I feel like Iowa plays a fascinating game every week, and last week was no different. So, a couple of things that I noticed, you know, USC's second half bounce backs continue. I feel like this might be becoming a trend. I believe it's three games in a row against Nebraska, at Northwestern, and obviously Iowa last week. They held Nebraska to 3 points in the second half, and they shut out Iowa in the second half last week. So it's just something to keep an eye on. It feels like they tend to start slow and then implement some second half adjustments, something to bear in mind going forward. In the first half, they faced multiple injuries to their starting lineup. I think they had a safety or two down and also left tackle Elijah Page. And I think they were down a D tackle as well. Their defensive tackle, Keyshawn Silver, did come back. But Page, Fitzgerald, and Ramsey all remained on the sidelines. And they figured out a way in the second half like they have for the last couple of games. Now, Mekhi Lemon finished the day with 153 receiving yards and one touchdown. He also became the first Power Four receiver to reach 1,000 yards this season. They also had a couple of big third down conversions from Jacoby Lane as well. Listen, Iowa's defense is for real. They've played several quality opponents this year. They held IU to 20 points. They held USC to 26, and they believe they held Oregon to 18. So the story with Iowa, as it's been for a while now, is can the offense do enough, right? But, you know, the defense is going to keep them in every game that they play. USC, I think, is a really fascinating team going forward. But it was a great game. You know, Iowa continues to be dogs on defense. I wish their offense brought more to the table for you, Mr. Wall.
They bring plenty to the table. Come on now. They were taking them down in the first half. I had to listen to this one on the radio. I didn't get to watch it on TV. I will say I disagreed with every subjective call by the officials as I was listening to it on the radio. Mr. Story, what'd you see out of this one?
Well, I think Josh kind of hit the nail on the head. Iowa has still one of the best situational defenses in the entire country, especially on third down, especially in high leverage situations in the red zone. Now, credit where credit is due. USC put together a solid win. A lot of it was the second half. You had mentioned Mekhi Lemon, King Miller, 19 for 83 on the ground. If you were starting King Miller in daily fantasy, though, look away because he got pulled out on the 1 yard line twice and let the backup running back vulture a couple of touchdowns. Might be a little bitter there, but Maivia was very efficient through the air. And give credit to Kamari Moulton, 8-15 for 90 on the ground for Iowa. He also had a reception. It's just they couldn't do enough to overcome USC. I think with any other defense, USC was putting up 35, 38 in the spot. So while Iowa is not going to make the playoffs this year, more than likely, they're going to be going bowling, and I wouldn't want to face them in December.
No, that's a great point. As a football team, you do not want to face Iowa football program right now because they can beat any single team in the nation. I know I'm an Iowa Hawkeye fan. I'm partial, but I guarantee you, I will take this to my grave. Iowa football can compete against any team in the nation right now. It is because of their defense, in my opinion. Josh mentioned that. Mr. Story mentioned that. The score to this one was 26-21. So those of you that did back Iowa, you probably covered on the Hawkeye side. USC not just scoring. Either one or two more points to cover on the USC side. Didn't get it done. So hey, yo, Hawkeyes, hang your hat on that. You covered the spread. Got to love that. LSU versus Arkansas, another football game. Mr. Story, I know you were all over this one. You love LSU. You love that they got rid of Brian Kelly. Or did they? Did they get rid of Brian Kelly?
Well, that has yet to be seen. I think that's probably going to work its way through the courts if you had to ask, if I had to guess. But in the meantime, though, Martin Van Buren has fully taken over the quarterback spot there for LSU. And he looks good. 21 for 31, 221. One touchdown. He was very efficient. A little bit on the ground, too, 36 yards rushing. But LSU kind of leaned into the defensive side of things here and their defensive identity, and it paid off. They kept the Arkansas passing game bottled up. They bottled up Mike Washington for most of the first three quarters. They kind of took away all those downfield shots that Arkansas is known with Ryan Sharp and Omega Blake. And this scoring got started off with I think it was a blocked punt return or a blocked kick or something like that to open it up. Other than that, it wasn't a whole lot on the Arkansas side. They couldn't finish off drives cleanly. So I'm not too impressed with Arkansas just in general this year, sitting at 2-8. LSU, as bad as they looked to begin the year, a little hope going in with no coach as of right now, no name coach at 6-4.
Yeah, Mike, you started to talk about it there. LSU's defense really stood out to me in this one. On the defensive side, the Tigers finished with three takeaways. They also held Talen Green, who I believe is one of the SEC's more productive passers. They held him to 165 yards passing, so was impressed with that. The Razorbacks were also really inefficient in late down situations. They converted on just two of their 11 third downs. LSU used the blitz early. They used it often, and they used it very effectively. And they really put Talen Green in under constant pressure. He just looked uncomfortable for most of the day.
And I think that LSU lucked out in this one. They got home field advantage. I mean, the final score was 23-22. I don't know if we mentioned that yet. It was a very close game. Mr. Story was absolutely correct about that touchdown. The first one was a block punt. They scored on that block punch touchdown, which really helped Arkansas take the early momentum, take that, juice out of the crowd. But as it came through, LSU got the crowd back into it, and they ended up winning this football game. Again, I think it was very lucky that they were the home team. They caught home in this matchup. Another game I love watching Notre Dame, and I love Notre Dame football. A lot of people like to hate on them, but I've been watching most of their games this year. And I messaged the group earlier this week. I think Notre Dame is the number two team in the nation right now, just the way I was watching them play Pittsburgh. I know they did lose to the number three team in the nation, but still, that's my opinion. They played Pittsburgh last week. Notre Dame versus Pittsburgh was a good game. I'll let either one of you jump in here. Either one of you had a dog in this fight?
I'm partial to Notre Dame myself. I know that you are not a fan of Pitt yourself, Mr. Wall, but Notre Dame, this is several weeks in a row where they've looked like the most balanced and complete team on both sides of the ball. They got the scoring started with a 56-yard touchdown run for Jeremiah Love, very clearly going to be a first-round pick in the NFL draft this year, next year. And then they got an interception return against Heinstel to get the scoring, like two touchdowns in 8 minutes, or 7 minutes, just in the first quarter. Pitt could not hang around in this one. Man, Notre Dame is going to be dangerous this week. They're going to be dangerous in the playoffs. This is another one where I'm really impressed with the team that they've put together, they've put around, and not much more to say about it. They look like a really good team right now.
Yeah, no, Notre Dame just continues to take care of business. I do want to get your guys' thoughts on CJ Carr, though. I think Notre Dame's defense is very solid. You mentioned it, Mike. Jeremiah Love is just a machine. He ran for a buck 47, highlighted by an absolutely ridiculous spin move and sprint to the end zone for a touchdown. CJ Carr, I think, worries me just a little bit, though. When we're talking about Notre Dame's playoff chances, I see some inconsistencies out of him. I have seen him turn the ball over in big moments of big games. I trust Notre Dame's defense. I think they have a fantastic head coach and Marcus Freeman, and I really love their running backs. And they've got more than just Jeremiah Love too. But I'm wondering going forward, how much can we trust their quarterback? Time will tell.
Yeah, that's a good question. And he didn't have to do much in this game. When you go up two scores in 7 minutes, one of which is a 60-yard rip from Love, and one of which is an interception return, there's not much that you're going to have to do. So it's tough to take away anything from Carr's performance in this one. Malachi Fields had almost 100 yards, so he looks good in the passing game and the receiving game there. I hopefully the, these he can be just what JJ McCarthy was for this championship team, for the Michigan championship team, couple games ago or a couple years ago, where he's just guiding that team and doing just what he needs to do to get the team in position to make big plays and win. Hopefully that's what we see. I understand what you're saying, like kind of faltering a little bit in big spots, but we'll see come late November here exactly where Notre Dame ends up in the rankings and who their first test is going to be.
I see you
Yeah,
sitting
it'll be
down here,
fun to watch.
Mr. Starr. I see you sitting down. I'm going to say something. I'm glad you're sitting down because you might fall off your feet for this one. I think he's kind of the Josh brings up a great point. I think he's the JJ McCarthy in the NFL this weekend. Let me tell you, right? I mean, he did not have a fantastic football game. And for those of you that don't, I don't watch the NFL, but I heard this through friends that JJ McCarthy did not have a great game. But Carr is very worrisome for this Notre Dame football team. It's a great point that Josh made. Notre Dame went up 14-0, coming down the field again for another drive. I think it might have been their third drive. They'd scored on their first two. Don't quote me on that exactly, but coming down the field, he makes a terrible decision, throwing over the top on a cover two defense when they have a linebacker sitting in spy, doesn't see that linebacker. You're up 14-0, about to go up 21-0. You throw a pick on that drive. That is not good for a football team. So it is a concern from Notre Dame, but I just think that Jeremiah Love, I think that offensive line, I think that defense in general will overcome any problems that Carr has for him. I understand you need a good QB1 back there, but it's not everything in the world. So to answer your question, Josh, I agree 100%. He is a worry. But as far as Notre Dame football, I am not worried about them. They're going to be one of the best teams this year. We're going to see them in the playoffs. It's kind of written in as is of now. Georgia, Texas, another great football game. Terrible, terrible score to this one. I was not happy with that as a Longhorns fan, but Georgia, Texas was a very good matchup.
Yeah, Georgia set the tone right from the start. Now, technically, Texas got the scoring started with a field goal, but Georgia's defense, they completely choked off Texas's explosive downfield shots. You know, your Moores, your Mosleys, your Wingos, those big chunk gains that Arch Manning loves to go downfield for. They took away those vertical concepts that usually spark the Longhorns' passing offense. They forced Texas to put together long mistake-free drives, which is exactly what Georgia wants. They want the other team to have to be in a position to make mistakes. And while they didn't turn the ball over very much, only one interception for Manning, like the inaccuracy of these short pass and intermediate passes, they just kept coming back to bite Arch Manning. 23 for 47, 251, one touchdown, one interception. They never could get momentum going. Georgia, they look like a complete team. Again, we keep talking about these teams on both sides of the ball, offense and defense. They're one loss now, 9-1. They win on defense, but they have efficiency on offense. They've got a rotation of running backs. They've got wide receivers that step up in big spots. Georgia's going to be a problem in the playoffs.
Yeah, I love everything you said about Georgia there, Mike, and I'll expand on that just a little bit. I love their head coach too. Kirby Smart has some balls. He really does. And I'll talk about that in just a second. But first and foremost, like you said, Georgia's defense was dominant. They really stifled Texas's explosive playability. Love their quarterback play as well. Gunnar Stockton was extremely efficient. He completed 24 of 29 for 229. He totaled five touchdowns. He had four through the air and one on the ground. But back to Kirby Smart for a second. I don't know if you guys watched this whole game start to finish, but Georgia had a key fourth down. It was fourth and one. I think they were on around their own 30. This was in the third quarter. I think they were up 14 to 10 before they really opened up the game. I would think the analytics in that situation would probably say punt. I'm not an analytics expert. I don't claim to be. Story, you could probably teach me a thing or two about that. But I would think that the analytics would have said punt. But Kirby Smart gambled and he hit. Gunnar Stockton had a nice 10-yard completion to move the change. A failure there could have really changed the dynamic of that game. But Kirby Smart, like I said, he's got no fear, man. And then instead of that flipping, right, Georgia marched down the field and scored on the second play of the fourth quarter, and the game was over after that. There was also another gamble, I believe, that Georgia executed a surprise onside kick in that game too. So not only are they well-rounded, not only do they have a great defense, a fantastic offense, their quarterback is smart, doesn't really turn the ball over a ton. They've got one of the best head coaches in the country, in my opinion.
Don't disagree with you there. And I've been saying it for years now. I agree with you 100%. The man's got a pair. He's got some stones. Let me tell you that onside, like who saw that onside kick coming? I guess that's why it worked. It was perfectly executed. Great time to call it. I mean, they don't necessarily lose that football game if they don't get that onside. That's why I love the call so much. But still, that is a ballsy call, especially for a coach at a high. You know, we see that in the lower tier programs all the time because they're trying to make a name for themselves. Somebody like Kirby Smart that's making those millions to make that call. I mean, it's just insane. I agree with you 100% there, Josh. Another football game
Let
here.
me
Oh.
jump in real quick, Mr. Wall, because this is the last bastion of the surprise onside kick. You won't see that in the NFL anymore with the way they changed the rules. Now you have to declare whether or not you're going to run an onside kick.
Yeah, that's the NFL we're talking here, Mr. Stark. Hey,
And
college,
I'm
you could
just
go
saying,
onside
like,
all you
the
want.
purity of the kicking game still exists in college, fortunately.
Yeah, you can kick it with your heel if you want. You can do whatever you want, college. It's college, baby. They don't got these rules they got in the NFL. You could dive on top of the quarterback and put your big old belt. Actually, I don't think you can. It's still a penalty in college, but we'll move on. Oklahoma at Alabama. I know it was a big football game. We had to put it on here. I didn't have it on here, even though it probably was the biggest football game of last weekend. As far as how the game went on the field, too, it was a very exciting one. Were you on the edge of your seat? Was your Apple Watch going off? left and right, Mr. Dory?
Talk about winning ugly. Like, this is the very definition of a team that probably sneaked victory from the jaws of defeat. They got outgained. Oklahoma got outgained 406 yards, Alabama's 406 to 212 yards, but it was turnovers, miscues in the red zone, a partially blocked field goal. All of these really contributed to OU's offense, who could barely move the ball. Again, we're talking 212 yards of total offense, winning this game 23-21. It vaults Oklahoma into now they're thinking bye, whereas Alabama is they're still in, but they're on the precipice now of being knocked out. Another loss, and they're gone. Alabama's yardage dominance basically meant nothing without execution in the key moments. They couldn't execute. I'm disappointed in Mateer. I'm disappointed in Robinson. Disappointed in Sategna. There's nothing going on offense for Oklahoma. They kind of feel like a letdown team come early December here. And Alabama on the flip side, they better tighten some things up. Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I certainly did not see this game going the way it did. You were talking about it earlier that, I mean, Oklahoma was basically outgained 2-1 in that game. But turnovers are the great equalizer. I don't want to draw too many comparisons to the NFL, but statistically, the Bears have a terrible defense, right? But they end up leading the league in turnovers, and that is a huge deal when you talk about winning the close games. That's what it's all about, and it was true here in the college game as well.
One thing I'll push back is I thought Mateer had a decent game. I didn't think he played terrible. Again, a lot of the stuff he does is on his with his legs. He extends the play, allows his receivers to get a little bit open. We see that backyard type football with Mateer. So I think you were a little hard on him, Mr. Story. I know you expect great things out of the man, and he is a fantastic quarterback. Don't get me wrong, but I think he played a little better game than you expected. We'll jump into this week's games. We won't be talking Alabama. I'll tell you that much. You know who Alabama is playing week 13 of college football? You probably don't. Because it's Eastern Illinois. That's what these SEC football teams are scheduling. They're scheduling Eastern Illinois, the second to last football game of the season. It's
Hey,
ridiculous. They should be kicked out of
Tony Romo's
Nebraska.
own Eastern Illinois Saluki.
Don't sleep on Eastern now. We
Yeah.
got how many head coaches or former head coaches of the NFL went to Eastern?
Shanahan,
Shanahan,
right?
I think.
Yeah,
Sean
Shanahan.
Payton, I believe.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Garoppolo as well. Obviously, he's not a coach. He's another quarterback, but yeah, they Eastern Illinois sent some dudes to the NFL. Crazy.
Absolutely. Hey, my uncle was a QB1 there for Eastern Illinois some years ago. He was one of those guys. He didn't make it to the NFL though. Surprising.
Bro.
But what are you going to do? Too bad. I could have got some autographs sold him maybe, but didn't happen. Let's jump into some of the games other than Alabama, Eastern Illinois that people probably want to hear about this week. Missouri at Oklahoma. Oklahoma catches home this week. Although they did go in Alabama last week and win on the road, so maybe they don't need it. I'll give you guys the updated line -7.5 on DraftKings right now, but that's at -105. So that line's probably moving back to a straight up touchdown. Mr. Story, taking that 7 points, or are you giving it?
I don't know. I really
Oh,
don't. I don't know.
I
I mean,
was
Missouri
on the
looked
edge of my
good.
seat, Mike.
Yeah,
Me too.
I know. Missouri looked good. They stopped Mississippi State last week. I mean, what's Missouri going to want to do in this game? They're going to want to run Ahmad Hardy 25, 30 times in this game. They're going to want to control that run game or the ground game with a bruising attack with Hardy there. Oklahoma, they're fighting their lives to stay atop the one loss cluster there or the two loss cluster there. After upsetting Alabama, we talked about that already. So this kind of feels like a slow, low possession game, and the over-under is very indicative of that. 42.5. The odds makers are not giving Missouri much respect. I don't know. Give me that 7.5 points. I think Mizzou's front seven can slow down Oklahoma. You know, Xavier Robinson hasn't looked outstanding this year, and I just can't see Oklahoma. They don't have that big playability that you'd want to cover a 7.5 point spread. So yeah, give me the 7.5 points with Missouri on the road.
Mikey, I think I'm going to go the other way in this one. For Missouri to make this a really competitive game, you alluded to it. They'll need to be able to run the ball effectively with Ahmad Hardy. Fortunately for Oklahoma, they do a really good job at stopping that run. They're only yielding 82 rushing yards a contest, which is good for fourth in the FBS. So that's going to be the story of the game, in my opinion. If Oklahoma stops the run, like I think they will, I think they cover.
I like that. It's about time they got some defense over there at Oklahoma. They brought in Venables, obviously a defense of oriented coach coming over from Clemson. He was the defensive coordinator under Sweeney. I think that Oklahoma is in stride. I'm going to take Josh's side in this one, but I'm not going to actually put money on it just because that 7.5 is, I'm definitely not taking the 7.5. Seven maybe because then I can get my push on a touchdown. But if I got under that seven number, I think I'd be taking Oklahoma just for the fact that they've been playing good football. I do disagree a little bit about Mateer regressing. I think he's doing very well. I think he's going to lead this team. And I just think they're going to come out and take it to Missouri. They're going to keep that two losses on their record. Missouri, they're going to get number four. Sorry, Missouri. We'll see you in some kind of bowl because you know I was going to be playing Missouri in a bowl game. It's just how it goes. We'll jump in another football game here. BYU 9-1 at Cincinnati 7-3. These are two teams that have been in the playoff talk ever since they added that extra spot. Four teams like that a couple of years ago have been in the playoff talk throughout the year. BYU is the favorite in this one at -2.5. Last I checked, I'll update those to make sure. Yeah, we're still at -2.5. A little bit of money there, -115. So. Ooh, maybe we get it down to a two or even a one, maybe a pick 'em. Who knows? By game time, over under a 54.5. Now it's a total, Mr. Story. Are we going over or under?
Oh, over on this one, baby.
Ooh.
54 and a half is high, but I love this game. I'm really looking forward to this. ESPN2, you get ready because I'm watching this game. I mean, BYU is squarely in that one loss territory, and their loss to number five in the nation now, Texas Tech. We watched that game. It was a drubbing, don't get me wrong, but BYU, they can't afford any slip ups. They need style points in this one. I'm thinking they're turning it on against Cincinnati in this game. They're completely balanced. LJ Martin has got 900 plus yards on the ground this year, and then they got Robertson through the air with 700 plus yards. And yeah, Sorsby's been good for Cincinnati, 20 plus TDs, very low turnover rate, but he hasn't faced many defenses with BYU's combination of physicality, edge pressure, etc. So yeah, BYU, the big question is, can they travel? It's a late game, so you got that going for you, but they are traveling quite a bit from Utah over to Cincinnati into Ohio. But yeah, I think this is a BYU walking away.
Am I going to go back to the BYU well again, Mr. Story? The last time you guys had me on, BYU was my lock of the week. I think it was at 10 and a half. It went off at, I got it at 14 and a half. That's how many points that they were getting in that game. And no, it wasn't enough because Texas Tech just absolutely destroyed them. But you know what? I'm doing it again. I'm ready to get hurt again. Cincinnati is not in the same class as Texas Tech. And I believe that BYU will be able to dominate this game with their physical style of play. Give me BYU.
Hey, there you go. I like it. We got some action on this game. We got some people putting their feet to the fire. Gotta love that. I think BYU does roll over in this one. Cincinnati just hasn't been impressive the past few weeks. Beginning of the year, I thought they were a very good football team that made the playoffs. Obviously, that is likely not going to happen. But I agree with both the guests here. BYU wins this one, and I think they win it big. Southern California, also known as USC, at number seven in the nation, Oregon, 9-1. We better spend some time talking about this, or I'm going to get some gruff from the fans. Let me tell you, in this football game, we got Oregon -9.5 now, as it stands. When I wrote these notes, it was -10.5. So a little bit of money coming in on USC. People liking that key number there for USC, probably betting it over under in this football game of 59.5.
Well, for me, I'm hoping that we get a shootout in this one. I got a lot of fantasy assets going into week one of the college fantasy football playoffs here. But just that aside, this game does kind of sniff, smell like a shootout to me. I mean, Oregon, Dante Moore, prior to last week against Minnesota, he'd been pretty mediocre against, but you can't blame him against Iowa, can you? Can you now? They've got a really good ground game. Their depth at wide receiver and tight end has been kind of tested a little bit. Sadiq has been banged up at times. Recorrin Moore has been banged up at times. But if Dante Moore's on, he hits his spots. This is a game where I can absolutely see these teams trading possessions and trading touchdowns back and forth. USC needs to stay ahead of the chains. They got to keep this game within striking distance. If Oregon forces them into a bunch of third and longs, it's going to be a rough going for Maivia. Even as good as he's played recently, and even as well as, excuse me, as well as he's played, and even with Mekhi Lemon at, I don't know, 1,100 yards now, whatever it is, if you're talking long down and distances, it's going to be a problem for USC. So I'm excited for this Saturday at 2:30. Let's get some popcorn on.
Absolutely. This is my favorite game of the week. A ton of obviously playoff implications. Oregon impressed early in the year, but I feel like they've faltered lately against Indiana. They lost that game. I know they beat Iowa, but I believe that Iowa should have won that game outright. Mr. Wall, I know you agree with me there. I believe these teams are a little bit more evenly matched than the spread would indicate. And I would lean USC here. They're going to need a big game from Mekhi Lemon. But number one wide receivers have eaten against Oregon, and I expect this game to be closer than the spread indicates.
I agree. Here we go. That's all right. I can finally disagree with you on something, but I do agree with you. Iowa should have won that football game. They should have beat Oregon 100%. I'm with you there, Josh. Now, the political side of me, I got to play politics here because I know we got some Ducks fans that listen to this program. So I'm going back to Ducks. I'm not going to be taking USC in this one, but I will be backing the Ducks for a reason. They have one loss on their record. You mentioned the game they lost. It was Indiana. I know you're a big Indiana fan, so you probably agree with their number two ranking in the nation. So if we look at it from 100,000 feet away, Oregon has one loss this season to the number two team in the nation. I'm sorry for that double two there, but to the second ranked team in the nation. I just think that they haven't really proven anything as far as win losses that they can lose football games like this to someone like USC coming into their house trying to win it. I do think that this one is going to go over. I think Mr. Story is going to be happy with all the points scored in this one after watching Iowa play USC last week. I mean, I mentioned I was listening to it on the radio. I just kept hearing wide receiver after wide receiver. Lemon catches for a 60-yard gain. Lemon catches across the field, makes a circus catch, blah, blah, blah. All this garbage. Well, as I'm listening to it as an Iowa fan, all this garbage about how good their receivers are doing. I think that's going to carry over to this football game. Oregon does have a defense, but I just think it's going to be a shootout in this one. I do think Oregon's going to cover. I like it under this minus 10 number that I'm actually seeing for the first time. I mentioned before they're at minus 10 and a half when I did these notes. So I think I might be putting a little bit of money on the Ducks. Josh, are we going to go straight up on this one?
Let's do it.
Let's
Might as
do it.
well.
What are you
Let's do
thinking?
it.
5, 10K, something like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just enough to keep things interesting.
Yeah, we want to keep it interesting. Don't want to break the bank, keep it interesting. We'll talk about it off the air so it's not recorded. So when I lose my bet, I don't actually have to pay you. I'll plead the fifth. We'll go with that. Jump into another game here. ACC jumping conferences. Number 22, Pitt, going into Georgia Tech, ranked number 16 in the nation right now. Another team with only one loss next to the record. I should double check that because, man, that is weird seeing Georgia Tech 9-1 this late in the season. Crazy thing to see. Georgia Tech in this football game was minus 2.5, as we've had to do all year, though. We're going to get the most recent line because it could have moved. No, we're still at minus 2.5. Georgia Tech minus 2.5, over under 61.5. Minus 135 if you want to back Georgia Tech in this one. Josh, I'm going to let you go first. Are you backing anyone in this football team? Are you an ACC fan?
I mean, it's not that I dislike the ACC. I just think that other conferences are much better at them in football. So that's kind of where I stand. Yeah, I mean, this game, I will definitely watch this game. It's obviously got ACC title game implications. The whoever wins, essentially. So we'll see what the Yellow Jackets have to offer. You mentioned they only have one loss. This is probably their best team in, oh gosh, 10 years, I'd say. 9, 10 years, something like that. Since Georgia Tech has been this good, at least from a record perspective. And it almost didn't happen, right? They were down late against Boston College last week before storming back. So they definitely have some resiliency. We'll see if they can close the door here. They lead the FBS in total offense, but they're near the bottom of the 136 teams in the FBS in total defense. So it'll be a good game. I feel like it's going to be close. I feel like the spread is set just about where it should be. I'll watch it. I don't know if I'm going to bet it though.
I'm excited for this game. You had put this in the show sheet, Mr. Wall, that this is a under the radar. I think this is a sneaky good ACC matchup. 7-3 Pitt, they're defense focused, and I'm sure you like that, but the over under tells the story here. 61.5 might have been 62.5 at one point. It feels like you're picking higher and higher over unders to get me excited here, Wall. I'm just so 61.5. I mean, Haynes King is probably the most dynamic dual threat quarterback in college football right now. He's only got 2,200 yards passing, but he's got 800 yards on the ground. I mean, second chance plays outside of the pocket, red zone conversions. This is a game where Haynes King can actually feast. Now, Josh, you mentioned they've got one loss. Their one loss isn't even a good loss. It's against, I think it was North Carolina State, a 500 team. So if Pitt's defense shows up, if they this is a game where their defensive ceiling can overcome Georgia Tech's red zone wins, because they're very good at converting in the red zone, their explosiveness downfield, then yeah, this one could be close. But I'll take the home do or the home I'll take Georgia Tech in this one. Give me the home favorite, only 2.5. It's below that key number of 3.
It absolutely is. And I'm guessing that gets to 3.5. You're probably going to change your tune a little bit. I like Georgia Tech in this football game too. I just think that, well, everyone knows how I feel about Pitt. And I would like to say I love West Virginia these days because of their, I won't say in this program because we're kind of PG rated, but West Virginia has a nice little chant. You guys can look it up on YouTube, what they say to Pitt. I think Georgia Tech will probably be replicating that chant here in this football game because it is a big matchup. I mean, it's under the radar for sure, but we're talking about two ranked teams here, number 22 in the nation, number 16 in the nation. It absolutely has, implications for the playoff, especially on the Georgia Tech side. We got Georgia Tech sitting about 32% probability to win the ACC. Pittsburgh only at 8%, but if they win this football game, things change very quickly. That jumps up to, Pittsburgh probably having a 40% chance of winning it if they can pull off this upset at Georgia Tech. I don't think it happens. I think Mr. King gets it done. I think that passing and rushing combination really helps. It's going to cause problems for Pitt. Now, you got to remember, as a football team, they're coming from Notre Dame. They're prepping against an offense like Notre Dame, where you got that running back that just, you got to prep for him all week. Now they're starting to have to put in a spy rather than having that linebacker key on the running back. Those linebackers are going to have to spy on Mr. King to make sure he's not ripping off 30, 40-yard runs against them. So it's just a bit of a different preparation. Notre Dame versus Georgia Tech, even though they're both very good football teams, I think they're going to have trouble with that. I think Georgia Tech comes away with this one. Last football game we're going to talk about here in full, anyways. TCU at Houston, number 23 of the nation right now. Houston sitting 8-2. Football game over under at 54.5, as I'd written this. Houston was the favorite. It was very close, -1.5 on the board. Are you going to back the favorite in this one too, Mr. Story, at home?
I really thought about it. I've been watching. I'm keeping an eye on Houston this year. I think they're at 23 now in the nation. Correct me if I'm wrong in the selection committee. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so
Yeah,
23.
that's what
So
I've got.
Connor Wigman's been very good this year. Been very efficient. Dean Connors, he's had really good games on the ground. Last week, I think he. I'm not sure. He might have gotten banged up a couple weeks ago. But yeah, for this one, I'm a 3 o'clock game. TCU 6-4. Houston 8-2. It's tough. I don't know enough about TCU to really like it's a game that's a team that I followed in the past, but I've just not seen any of their games this year. I haven't been following much or not in the national conversation. Probably just gonna pass on this one. I know it's a national game, it's on Fox, but man, that spread's moving all over the place. I'm just gonna stick away and maybe see what I can sprinkle in during the game, live betting.
Yeah, TCU is in an interesting role here, trying to play spoiler, right? At least it feels like a few short years ago, they were in the college football playoff. I believe they played Michigan that year, if memory serves. But and now they're in the role of spoiler. So they're going to try and dash Houston's Big 12 conference title hopes. TCU looked pretty lifeless against BYU last week, and I'm not confident that they show up with their season essentially over. I like Houston here.
Yeah, and I like Houston too. And I like it for a little different reason. We're going to talk about straight up not knowing anything about these football teams. We're going to talk about something called line movement, which is a topic that Mr. Story has talked about a few times in the past. Houston in this football game was at about a 56% probability to win it after their last football game. They've dropped all the way down. I mean, we're basically at a pick 'em now. We're talking about a 52, 53% probability. There is a lot of money coming in on TCU. Now, TCU is a well-known team for getting a lot of money on them. They're what's called a backed team. People will bet them just because they like TCU. So we have to keep that in mind. Keeping that in mind, keeping in the fact that when it originally posted, we're at a 56% probability. I really like Houston, especially if maybe we get a pick 'em in this one. We started -2.5, we're at -1.5. That's at -105. So that number is even moving a little further, probably down to -1 by tomorrow morning. And then from there, if we get that pick 'em, oh baby, that's going to be sexy. I'm not going to put it as my pick 'em this week. I will say that much. I got another game I have slated for that. But I think I'm going to back Houston in this one. What do you think about that logic, Mr. Story?
It's interesting. It's one of those things that you have to consider when you're looking at how these line moves. This is one that you had mentioned. I mean, we've seen a lot of line movement this year in general. We talked about it since the beginning of the season that, we get on the, we put the show, you put the show sheet together, and by the time even hours later we get to recording the show, lines have moved all over the place. And whether that's a function of there's more people betting because it's more legal in more states, or there's just more action, whatever it is, or there's more prominence because of the teams, it's tough to say. It's not the only factor, but if you're going to bet it, it's certainly a very unique one, and one that people might not be considering. So yeah, more power to you if that's the way you want to look at it. I'm not sure that I'm going to be betting it because of that though.
Okay, buddy. That's all right. You sit on the sidelines while you watch the champions play the football game. I'll say that much. Although we will get into some real put your feet to the fire. Time to put up or shut up, baby. It's the Pick'em College Football Rundown. Pick'em. Everybody loves that. I think some people just fast forward to see our picks, to hear what Mr. Story has to say, see how they're going to make some money this week. I think we should let Josh go first this week with his pick'em. Are you okay with that,
Oh,
Mr. Story?
100%. The last time that I took the mic that Josh was on, I ended up losing. So let's switch some things up here. And Josh, give us a winner to start.
All right. So this is now, I believe, my third guest appearance on the pod, if memory serves. My first lock, there was a late injury after I made that pick. It was Arizona State against Utah, and Sam Leavitt didn't end up playing. So I feel like you guys should give me a pass with that one. I'm not going to put that in the negative column. But the last time I was on the pod, I was ranting and raving about BYU and Texas Tech. Just absolutely ran over them. So I'm going to put my official record at 0-1. Are you guys okay with that? Can we agree to that? Is that fair?
Works for me.
All right,
All right,
you
two
can have
thumbs
it,
up
John.
for
Even though
Mr.
I
Story.
lost money on both your bets, because I'm always backing our
I
guest
know.
picks too. We'll give you 0-1. You just send me a check, the reimbursement for that first loss.
Checks in the mail, buddy. Put it on my tab. But here's and that's a lot of words to get to my pick, right? So I scoured the lines in preparation for this call. Arizona State minus 6.5 at Colorado. I'm going back to the Arizona State. Well, why am I doing this, you ask? The Buffaloes are a bad football team. And I want to talk about redemption stories a little bit. We've seen this in the NFL lately. Guys like Sam Darnold getting second chances. Baker Mayfield was on a second or third chance, right? We've seen this with quarterbacks specifically. I want to talk about Jeff Sims. So Jeff Sims is the Sun Devils backup quarterback turned starting quarterback, right? And he comes in with some motivation. So 2 years ago, he was the starter for a Nebraska team at Folsom Field. It played poorly, and Colorado ended up winning the game and they stormed the field. Okay. Jeff Sims is going to come in here pissed off. He's been playing well since he replaced Sam Leavitt. Look for him to have a big payback game against the woeful Colorado Buffaloes. Arizona State minus 6.5. That's my lock.
Revenge game.
Love it.
They
Excellent.
love it.
Arizona State. You know what, Josh? I'll be honest. I looked at that game. I was and what but I wasn't looking at the revenge angle. I was looking at I'm seeing that Colorado is currently ranked in the offensive power rankings 108th in the nation out of 121 qualified teams. So, or 131, something like that. So, yeah, that was what I was looking at. Minus 6.5. But I'm going with a game that we already talked about already. Already talked about already. There you go. But BYU minus 2.5 versus the Cincinnati Bearcats. BYU quietly consistent, one of the more consistent one-loss teams. Their balance travels really well. We talked about LJ Martin. We talked about Chase Roberts. I get it. Brandon Story's been good. He's been efficient, but this is a real step up in the defenses that Cincinnati's been playing. BYU can control the early downs. They should dictate the pace in this one. It's a one-score game in a classic short road favorite setup. Laying 2.5 is very appealing to me. BYU's physical. They convert in the red zone. They got two playmakers that should make this a likely one possession, easy one possession game. BYU minus 2.5.
All right, I got those both marked down. Mr. Story, I'm going to ask you a question here. Now, you're talking about BYU, and it applies to Josh too. It's applicable to Josh. You're talking about BYU minus 2.5. We talk about sometimes, hey, we wait till game time to put our bets in. At that minus 2.5 right now, I'm guessing you're going to put that bet in right now. You're not going to be waiting for a better number than that because you don't want it to go over that three, right?
I think both the over under and the spread are going to tick up in this one. So I'd be surprised if it wasn't three by tomorrow morning. I'm definitely going to be putting that in tonight, and I'm probably going to be hint hint taking the over in this one as well.
Love it. Probably goes for Arizona State too. You know, we could get that key number if enough money does come in on Arizona State. So that's something you might want to get in right away. And the reason I brought that up, because I have a similar situation here, and I was thinking about it right before I did my pick 'em here, and I want to make sure I've got some action on this so I can get that number just in case. I'm going to take SMU this week, a team that hasn't been talked about a lot this year. I think they're going to be pissed off. They did not get treated very well by the playoff selection committee, in my opinion. They have not been talked about enough for as good as their football team is. They're playing against Louisville and they're home in this football game. Louisville, what have they shown me this year? Nothing. Not a damn thing. I'll say that much. I really like SMU. I like them to cover that 2.5 number. But again, we're at that key number. So what I was just talking with Mr. Story about is I'm probably going to put that bet in right away. As a matter of fact, I already did, but I'm putting that bet in right away to make sure it doesn't get to that -3 so I get a push on a field goal, or even worse yet, -3.5, get a loss on a field goal win. So that's where I'm going with my pick on this week. Man, what another fantastic episode this was, in my opinion. Every time Josh comes on, it's so exciting, is it not?
I get goosebumps just thinking about Josh getting on the program. I know. I'm sure the listenership numbers jump up precipitously as well once we announce that Josh will be joining us on the
Stop using those big words, man.
podcast. Precipitous. The numbers do go up. I will say that because then it's not just me, my mom and Story's mom listen. Then we got Josh's mom listening too. So we got 33% more viewership. I'll say that much. But until next week, guys, I appreciate everyone listening. Rundown Nation, appreciate you guys always staying faithful to us. We'll be back next week with more content. Please check out all our episodes. Stay sharp, sports bettors.